everyone, and welcome to Minute 57 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action movie Die Hard, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and once again, we're coming to you from Baltimore, and I'm being hosted by my guest, Nick Rehack. So thank you very much again, Nick. The accommodations were great last night.
Appreciate that.
Thanks a lot.
How was the mint on the pillow?
It's a little chocolatey okay. For me, but you know, but I appreciate the effort. There you go. That works. Thank you. So, minute 57 begins with Marco continuing his teasing and ends with Al sitting down calmly in his squad car. So yesterday we ended the minute with Marco doing an acrobatic flip onto the table and start shooting at the sides of the table for some strange reason. So, you know, I think that partially what he's doing there is just trying to tease John. He also wants to keep him in place, but he's still teasing him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't go this way, don't go that way, you never know where I'm going to shoot, and stuff like that. And then reach the end of the table, which yesterday we started talking a little bit about the shape of the table.
Mm-hmm.
Is there
mm-hmm.
anything else you wanted to say about it besides what we said yesterday?
Just to reiterate that it's impractical.
Yes. It's a zigzag table
that
just does not work. Not at all. And so John gets to the end of that table, and then Marco screams out, "You are done. No more table. Where are you going, pal? Next time you have a chance to kill someone, don't hesitate." And as he's doing this, you know, surprisingly, he ran out of bullets. So therefore, mm-hmm. he's, you know, getting ready to change the clip right at that point. You know, it's I've always loved how, you know, in movies, everyone has, you know, magic machine guns and magic bullets.
You know, that just continue to
last. Yeah, they continue, and you only need to change your clip when the script needs you to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Not because you really need to. I mean, I don't know. Have you ever like fired an automatic rifle?
No. I've always been like shotguns has always been pump. So I know how many I got, and then when I'm out.
That's right. Okay. Well, in movies, shotguns also go as many.
Yeah,
as
isn't
you
that
need.
Nice?
You know, it's like when you're playing. We were discussing earlier. You know, before we were recording about the fact that, you know, they had the game, you know, the arcade games,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
where all you have to do is just shoot at a certain spot and it reloads for you.
Yeah.
You know, and you just can, if you do that properly, you're just going to get more and more, you know, bullets each time. And
you don't even have to let go of the trigger. You can just go back and forth and back
right.
and forth on
That's
it.
Right. You shoot down to the left-hand side of the bottom and you get more ammo and, you know, and it works.
Yeah.
And that's more or less what they do in movies, except they don't have to aim anywhere. They just automatically have as many bullets as they need and as they want.
Just pulling it out of thin air.
Yeah, completely. And I mean, it's fun watching that. I mean, I was in the Army 30 years ago in the Israeli Army,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't work that way in real life.
I would imagine that.
You know you have 29 bullets or 30 bullets, and mm-hmm. that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the whole idea of having something that's, you know, semi-automatic that you can choose whether you're shooting one bullet or if you're shooting three bullets or if you're just spraying everything at once. Most of the time, you're not going to spray everything at once because that's just a waste of your bullets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to actually try and hit something.
Yeah, at least once.
Yeah. Well, it depends on how many people you're against. If you're just against
that's
John McClane under the table, you only want to hit him once. You know, but he, I guess, sillily or stupidly, you know, wasted his bullets teasing John
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and then happened to run out. It's a good thing he had another clip, though.
Yeah.
You know, and
where does he even pull that clip out of? Is it out of a jacket pocket or something? It's got to be out of a jacket pocket, right?
He's not wearing any jacket. He's just got a shirt on. So maybe a lot of times in movies they have. No, he pulls it out of his. He just pulled it out of his pocket.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So all right, I can believe
he
that.
He pulls it out of his pocket, but we don't see him put the other clip anywhere.
No, he just lets it go.
Yeah, but we don't see it on the ground
or on the table.
Or on the table.
That's
it's
weird.
Just, it disappears.
It's again, magic.
It's magic.
It floated back to his pocket to reload. If I drop it on the left side, it'll get
there.
Full
you go.
Again.
That's right. Oh, that's amazing. You know the he. You know he realizes he's out. He pulls. It just disappears
mm-hmm.
completely. Oh wow. Okay. And so first of all, I was thinking about the fact that you know he mentions the term pal. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't sound as if that's something that Marco would say. You know, he's he's saying it in a teasing manner.
Yeah, for sure.
He's like, "Where are you going, pal?" Mm-hmm. You know, and maybe, and but he doesn't say it like in a fake American accent or something like that. Where he, the way that he's saying it, you know. So where do you think the term "pal" comes from?
For him, I'm sure it's got to be where he saw like
some from him.
Oh, in general,
in general.
Okay.
Well, actually, you could say what he thinks about. First of all, okay, where do you think Marco gets it from?
I think Marco's getting it from just like some random movie or show that he's seen where someone's calling somebody pal.
Die Hard.
And then
he's seen these episodes of Die Hard.
If I had to guess, pal has to be some form or like slang term at some point of like compatriot, I think.
Okay,
or maybe I'm wrong.
So according to the Oxford English Dictionary, the term pal was first used in 1770.
Hmm.
Which I would never have thought it was. Mm-mm. That. And usually what it means, it at the time, it meant that it's someone who's a partner in crime.
Okay.
Okay. It's, and then another definition of it is a comrade. When highwaymen would rob in pairs, they'd say such a one was his or my pal.
Hmm.
You know, the two of them were pals.
Hmm.
And they were, you know, highwaymen.
Okay.
And stuff like that.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, I found that interesting also, but the thing. So
1770.
Yeah.
That's what's blowing my mind.
Yeah.
I can't see past that. I can see like late 1800s cowboys.
Okay, so the late 1800s, they changed the definition to mean friend.
Okay.
As opposed to just partner in crime.
Yeah.
So in the 1880s, it meant like people just were palling around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then after that, you had pen pals.
Okay.
Which was referring to, was in the like 1920s.
Mm-hmm,
they started the idea of that. And then gal pal in the 1930s.
I think people just like rhymes and alliteration.
Apparently.
I think it's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Sounds like it. And then we get into palimony.
That I haven't heard.
which
is that just a buddy that owes you money?
No. Palimony is what you pay to your ex-wife.
I thought it was just alimony.
No, alimony. Palimony is what you pay to an unmarried partner, it says, since the
70s. Huh.
Hmm. Ah, it's okay. A humorous blend of pal and alimony for divorced couples, still on good terms. There you go.
Okay, that's what I'll buy that.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. I'll buy that for sure.
Palimony is... Okay, that makes a little more sense. Okay. so pal, once again, it's changed nowadays. And it's used to describe aggression or sarcasm through a polite, mild, and neutral word. What's next for pal? Well, it probably doesn't care where it's going, just as long as it's with you. Put it there, pal.
It's like passive aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, that sort of makes sense.
Yeah, I'll buy that.
You know,
I'll absolutely
where he uses
that.
The term pal here. You know, and then John basically says, thanks for the advice. And just opens up and starts shooting from under the table.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, first of all, I'm very concerned about the fact that it can actually, the bullets go through the table.
Yeah.
So easily.
Yeah.
You know, you'd think that this is a boardroom where they're going to have
a sturdy wood.
Very sturdy wood.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, they didn't skimp on any of their costs here.
Mm-mm. Now, especially if you look at the design, you know, it's zigzag, and then, of course, he gets to the end, and there's that logo for the building, which I really, really like. The more I saw it, the more I dug it.
Yeah,
but it's gold. Or, like, you know, it's got, like, a nice goldish-looking paint job to it. And,
yeah.
You know, one would think, but, you know, in this case, guess not.
Yeah, and John perfectly knows where Marco is, because he's not just shooting through the table. He hits him, you know, in his legs.
Like, right there, which looks painful.
Yes.
I mean, it's
got to
be.
I'm trying to think of where there's a kill shot here.
I don't think there is. I don't know.
Well, we know that Marco dies.
Well,
from this, he's dead here. It's not like he doesn't die later. You know, he doesn't die tomorrow. He's mm-hmm. he's dead today.
Well, it goes through legs, so maybe it's hitting arteries or major veins in the legs. But at the same time,
maybe it's hitting his torso also. But we just don't see it. We see the squibs on his leg.
Mm-hmm.
There's like four of them, six of them. I mean, that's got to be painful because it's around his crotch area anyway. Mm-hmm. But
maybe
still.
One caught him in the head and we don't see it because his head flies back immediately. You know?
It could be.
Like it's just back.
Because he's bending over.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. The momentum from that. And then as he lays, his legs are kind of on full display and then he gets him up, tags him up.
Okay, there's something for that. Something to that.
We're solving it.
Yeah. that's what we're here for, to try and solve it. And then the shot, you know, with all this tension and everything like that, the shot just changes real quickly, and we're back to Al and Eddie back in the, you know, back in the lobby. And Al starts walking towards the door, and Eddie sees that he's walking towards the door, so he gets up to go let him out. And Al goes, "Sorry to waste your time." And he goes, "No problem at all."
Yeah.
You know, again, very friendly.
Yeah. Very palling around.
Yeah.
And the thing, too, is they go back and forth between two types of tension. One tension is literally McClane is fighting for his life. And the other tension is he going to get found out? What's going to happen? Is Al going to die? Is he going to get shot? Like, when will he figure out what's going on? It's like a ticking time bomb versus, you know, fighting for your life. It's a real roller coaster how they just amp that tension and keep it up and down and up and down. You're just so engaged.
Yeah.
And then when you finally let it go, you're like, when are you going to figure out what's going on? And then that's a whole other type of tension
right.
that you're getting.
Exactly. And, I mean, the editing here is amazing.
Yeah. Really well done.
The way that they chose to do this.
Because it's not like some movies do that where they step away to something else, but it's too long. And you're like, I don't care what's happening. Get me back to where I want to be.
Right,
and then you end up missing. But then you end up missing some plot points.
Right. No, but here you do care about both of them. On the one hand, you want them to stay with this, but you also want to see what's going to happen to Al. Because you know that there's a guy standing there with a gun.
Yeah.
You know, there's, you know, when you're watching this the first time, like, what's going on? What's, you know, who do we want to live here? You know, and stuff like that. And at this point, you know, the two of them say Merry Christmas to each other. And then Al starts leaving. And he, you know, he starts singing as he's walking to the car.
Yeah. Skipping verses, which I find hilarious.
Yeah. That's true also. But what's great is that now we all know, anyone who listens to music knows that there are times that that music is just going to get stuck in your head. You know, this is the music that was playing when he was in the AM/PM.
Yeah.
You know, so he's, let's say this is a half hour later or whatever. I don't know exactly how much time has passed. Right? But he's got that song stuck in his mind.
Yeah.
Do you know what the technical term is for getting a song stuck in your mind?
No, but I need to know because it happens to me at least once a week.
Okay. So wait, you know what? Why don't we wait till tomorrow? No, just kidding. Just kidding, Nick. I won't do that to you. I need a place to stay tonight with a mint on my pillow.
Yeah, so, and it'd be nice to have a hot meal instead of a cold one.
You can give me slop and...
here's some seconds.
And I'll be chained to the wall. All right, so the term is called an earworm.
Okay.
Okay, there are other... it's sometimes referred to as brainworm. Sticky music or stuck song syndrome.
Sticky music.
That's what it says here.
Stuck song syndrome kind of sounds lazy. I'm not going to lie. You think it would have some kind of like something-umpthing Asia or something-something syndrome, but it's
And
like
then
a
there's
fancy...
a more scientific term,
oh, here we go.
Which is known as involuntary musical imagery.
Okay.
Which is known as INMI.
I can get behind that one more.
Right. It's a catchy or memorable piece of music or saying that continuously occupies a person's mind even after it has no longer is no longer being played or spoken about.
Okay.
Right. It's involuntary musical imagery is as a label is not solely restricted to earworms. Sometimes you have musical hallucinations also fall into this category, although they're not the same thing. Okay. Earworms are considered to be a common type of involuntary cognition. Some of the phrases used often to describe earworms include musical imagery repetition and involuntary musical imagery.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So, I mean, it's happened to me so many times, you know, where you get a song stuck in your head and you just don't know how to get rid of it. I mean, this doesn't tell you how to get rid of it, but what it tells you is that there's a term.
Yeah.
You know, that we're normal that this type of thing happens, you know. And so, I mean, I found a whole bunch of different, like, interesting cases where they started talking about it, about different researchers and stuff like that. So there's a researcher from the University of London, whose name is Vicky Williamson, who she found that in an uncontrolled study, that earworms correlated with music exposure, but could also be triggered by experiences that trigger the memory of a song, such as seeing a word that reminds one of a song, hearing a few notes from the song, or feeling an emotion one associates with the song. The list of songs collected in the study showed no particular pattern other than popularity. So in other words, any song can get stuck in your mind.
Yeah.
In your head. It doesn't really make a difference you know, we're not talking about something specific.
Right.
So then another researcher named James Kalaris did a study that 98% of individuals experience earworms. Both women and men experience the phenomenon in equally often, but they tend to last longer for women, and they irritate women more than men.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know. It's pretty irritating.
Yeah, regardless. I find that until I listen to the song that's stuck in my head, it's going to be there. But as soon as I listen to that song, I'm thinking of it, it's gone. And it goes away, which I really like.
Okay. So the statistics that he was able to produce suggest that the song that has lyrics accounts for 73.7% of earworms, mm-hmm. where instrumental music only can cause 7.7%.
I'm not going to lie, I'm surprised the lyrics one is not higher and the instrumental one is lower.
Yeah, well, my problem is it only reaches 80%. Well, it's 80-something percent here. You know, it doesn't even reach 100%, so I don't know what happens with the rest of it. It didn't mention it here. You know, there are people who can't get rid of them at all.
Yeah. Ooh, you imagine? It's just stuck. That's a Twilight Zone episode right there.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Now, there's another study that was done by the British Journal of Psychology, which talks about the fact that most of the time, earworms are usually 15 to 30 seconds in length and are more common in those people who have an interest in music.
Huh. Okay.
Right. And they say that earworms can occur with either positive or negative music. Mm. Positive music would be something that sounds happy or is calm. Negative music would be something of the opposite, where the music sounds angry or sad. Right? And so what they're basically saying is a lot of it has to do with the positive-negative feeling of the music caused by the piece. And that's why a lot of times instrumental music doesn't affect people that way.
Okay.
Because it's, I guess maybe you're thinking of the lyrics.
Maybe.
Right.
You're focused on the words.
Right. So they tried to actually think of different antidotes of how to stop it. Mm-hmm. So another research group from Western Washington University, they found that if you engage working memory by doing moderately difficult tasks like anagrams or Sudokus, or if you start reading a book or something like that, that was an effective way of stopping the earworms and reducing their recurrence.
Hmm.
Okay, another publication points out that melodic music has a tendency to demonstrate repeating rhythm, which may lead to endless repetition unless a climax can be achieved to break the cycle. So if you're listening to music that's, I guess, somewhat monotonous or something like that.
Cyclical.
It could cause it. So another study said that if you chew gum, that would actually help also signal blocking the subvocal rehearsal component of auditory short-term memory.
Really?
I'm telling you what it says here. I don't know. I didn't do the research. I just found it interesting to talk about this.
Chewing gum.
Yeah. And they say sometimes you should ask yourself why you're experiencing this during a particular song. And someone else said that the different remedy is to try and find a cure song to stop the repeating music. Meaning you should have like a set song that will always stop it. I don't know what that set song could be. Sometimes if you use cure songs, it could be like God Save the Queen or Happy Birthday. Those are cure songs.
I feel like Happy Birthday would be worse because that's something that can kind of get stuck because it's the same pattern kind of over and over.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's a cure song that you get that song stuck in your head instead of instead of Let It Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow. I don't know.
It's a double-edged sword.
Yes. Now, there is a woman named Jean Harris who murdered a man named Herman Tarlnauer, and she was obsessed with the song Put the Blame on Mame, which she heard in the movie Gilda.
Hmm.
And she, for 33 years, she had that song stuck in her mind.
That's a while.
Yeah.
That's too long. You said 33?
Yeah.
How do you go through life and nothing else takes its place? Do you not listen to other music? Are you not watching movies? Are you not?
I don't know. I mean, again, this is, Gilda came out in, like, what, 47? So
something like that.
So I guess she wasn't going to movies in the 40s to the 70s. I don't know.
She got busy.
There's also a Mark Twain story called A Literary Nightmare, which is all about earworm. It's about someone who can only get rid of the song by finding a way to transfer it to another person. Otherwise, it'll get stuck in their head. I didn't know that, that Mark Twain wrote like horror, horror type books.
I thought it would have been like folksy Americana, like borderline Aesop fable stuff.
Yeah. And then there's another story that was written by Arthur C. Clarke, The Ultimate Melody, which also deals with earworms.
Mm-hmm.
And the book Touching the Void by Joe Simpson is all about not being able to get the tune Brown Girl in the Ring out of the character's head.
What? I've never heard of that song before.
No, it's a... Oh, the song. All right. I don't know. And then, you know who E.B. White is?
Yeah.
He wrote Charlotte's Web. Stuart Little and Charlotte's Web, I think.
Did he?
Maybe it's just Charlotte's Web. Right, I don't remember. So he had a short story called The Supremacy of Uruguay, which also deals with songs getting stuck in people's heads.
Huh, okay. He did both.
He did both.
He did both Charlotte's Web and Stuart Little.
Right. So, all right, we were both right on that one.
Huh. I had no idea so many people wrote about so many...
Well, because if it happens to 98% of the people... So
yeah, you know, eventually everyone, someone's gonna
you know, even Mark Twain had this problem, right? And decided to write a book about it, you know, or a story about it at least.
Mm.
So yeah, I found that very interesting. So yeah, so apparently Al has this stuck in his head.
Mm.
He's got the earworm of Let It Snow, which
he's skipping verses on, so it must not be so strong in his head.
Maybe he just doesn't know. No, he's got the tune in his head, but he doesn't necessarily know the words.
Okay, all right.
You know, and doesn't he also mostly say dum diddy dum?
Yeah, for a good part.
So there you go. He's not skipping words, he just doesn't know them.
Yeah, he's making them up. He's making them up. This is my version of the song.
Yeah. And so he starts walking towards his car, and then we see John looking from above, and John, you know, wants to see what's going on. Now, part of the whole problem that I have here is that John has now just been in a firefight for the last few... It's a
couple
minutes. For the last minute.
Yeah, at least.
Or, no, last minute and a half. Okay, fine. And now he's concerned what's going on. You know, like, he doesn't really... I'm sure in his mind, he doesn't know how much time has passed. You know, and for him to quickly go over and see the car still there and say, oh, for the love of... You know
where's the cavalry?
Off. Yeah. Correct. And then he looks around frantically around the boardroom. He looks back and forth between the boardroom, the table, you know, and you can see that there's an idea forming in his mind.
Yeah.
You know, thankfully, they don't tell us right away what his idea is. You know, he's looking around for something that he can throw through the window.
Which I always thought it would have been the chair, because that's what he's using at first.
Yeah, but the chair you saw, he was able to shatter parts of the window, but he wasn't able to break through the window because you know, I guess he doesn't have enough force.
Well, I thought he would have just kept hitting it until it did and then just throw the chair.
No, but now maybe
together.
He's... he doesn't see Al get into the car, does he?
Ooh, I don't think he does. I think he just runs out.
I think he sees, you know, the car is down there. Right, he doesn't see Al show up.
Unless, as we see Al walk to it singing and humming that song, he sees him and then goes and does what he does.
Ah, he does see him. He does
for a
see
little
him.
Bit. Okay.
He does see him. And that's when he's looking back and forth. Okay. He now knows the cop is about to leave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So then Al takes his radio and goes 8 Lincoln 30 to dispatch. And then we get a response 8L30, go ahead. Yeah, that's a wild goose chase over here at Nakatomi Plaza. You know, he knows that nothing's going on here. You know, and he continues to sing and then starts to get into his car. And that's pretty much how this minute ends.
Yeah, it's a real hype minute.
Yeah, for sure.
Here's something I want to run by you, though, because I found this and I kept rewinding it on this rewatch. When he gets up from the table, there's two statues. The statue on the far left, doesn't that look like Anubis? With the pointed ears and the arms crossed in front of it?
It does.
And a little bit of black and gold. And yeah. Anubis is the Egyptian god of death, right? When we look on the other side, from when he's coming up under the table, it looks similar to like a Buddhist-type statue.
Okay.
And I think that that's such a weird dichotomy between the two, peace and nirvana and then death, especially when it's in Nakatomi Plaza, and we mostly see Japanese or, you know, Asian cultural features and not necessarily Egyptian.
Okay.
Or other stuff. And I just, why, unless it's like supposed to be something else and, you know, just from afar it's what it looks like. But, I mean, that's what I'm seeing. Which I think
what,
is.
What do you think? What do you think they're trying to say with this?
I don't know if maybe it's just like a, you know, we're looking at it the wrong way, or, you know, for the longest time, he was trying to choose peace because he didn't want to hurt anybody. He wasn't tried. He just wanted to stop the guys. You know, he is a cop, but then he chose death instead, or and the situation in general chose death. I don't know. It just caught my eye to such a point where I had to stop and like say, you know, why is this here? Because there's no, you know what I mean?
No, you think the production design is doing that on purpose?
I don't think so. But, I mean, you do have the way it's filmed, the split from the windows. And it's separating the two.
Right. Right. I mean, a few weeks ago, there was a shot where you see what looks like a cross.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You know, in Holly's office when John gets in there. You know,
and a lot of guys are wearing crosses in the movie.
Savior and stuff like that. The Savior and stuff like that.
Yeah. Maybe I'm just reading too much into it.
Could be. But why not?
Yeah,
that's what we're here
let's
for.
Let's go with that.
That's what we're here for. We're here to read into this as much as possible. You know, I love the size of what he has broken out of the window. It looks like an eye.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. It does.
You know, this the eye of Sorin
looking down.
You know,
I like that a lot. I like that.
It's the shape of like a vertical eye.
Yeah, especially you when know, you go the Sauron route. And it's looking down at it, too.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
That's really neat.
All right. You have anything else you want to say about this before we get into the script?
I don't think so. I think it's just that part. Yeah, I just definitely wanted to talk up the Anubis thing, and I did that. So, mission accomplished on my end.
All right, great. Okay, so the script, once again, a few minor discrepancies. So, first of all, the dialogue is a little different. Marco only says, next time, don't hesitate. He doesn't say anything about no more table, where you're going, pal, you know. And then what he says is, next time you have to kill somebody, don't hesitate. As opposed to, in the script, it just says, next time, don't hesitate.
Hmm. Okay. And, see, I like the addition.
Yeah, for sure.
Of the kill somebody part.
You know, it makes him a pal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Makes him a pal.
Yeah. And, I mean, all it says in the script about how he shoots Marco is it says, McLean aims directly above him and fires twice into the underside of the table. The bullets rip through the table and Marco, who drops beside McLean. You know, so, they went with it.
Yeah.
You know, they decided to be a little more
aggressive. You
know, aggressive.
For
and,
sure.
And, no, and gory, but I think it works better that way. Because, you know, if he would have just shot twice and hit him, so you'd be like, oh, come on, that's just a lucky shot.
Yeah.
Here he empties the entire clip into it. I don't remember how many shots he takes, but you know, we know at least four
or five.
Maybe
somewhere
the fifth
there.
One hits him in the head, like you said.
Could be, and that's when his body goes back.
Yeah,
and
that's very possible. And then the only other difference is when Powell is talking on the radio, so it's much longer what he says. He says, in the script, he's known as Adam 10. So it says, 1 Adam 10 to 6421. We had a wild goose chase on that 436. Everyone's okay here? Over. Waiting. Loosening his tie, he murmurs, oh, the weather outside is frightful. But the delightful.
Okay.
And then the dispatcher responds and says, Roger, 1 Adam 10. We thought it was a crank call anyway. Clear to code 8. Roger. So, I mean, it's not necessary. It's not needed.
Right.
But again, it shows something's going on here with the dispatch. You know, the fact that, we discussed this in depth both last week and the week before.
Right.
That nowadays, if someone were to call up and say there's a terrorist incident somewhere or there's a shooting incident somewhere, the dispatch is going to take it a lot more seriously than
For
they
sure.
do in this movie.
Yeah.
They don't take it seriously at all.
No. No. And it's 88, so it's 13 years before
9/11, but still, you know, you'd think that they would have taken it a little bit more seriously.
Especially because it's something, assumedly, because, you know, I wasn't really around in 88, but something so bizarre for the time.
Right. Correct. especially Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they're just, it's Christmas Eve, everyone's drunk.
Somebody's been drinking, yeah. Yeah.
They're already drunk and, you know, nothing's going to happen here. I don't know. What can I tell you? So, every Tuesday we have a segment called Off the Beaten Track, Holiday Edition, where my guests will give a little story about an adventure, a misadventure that happened to them sometime over their lives. It could be holiday related or vacation related, whatever. So you got a story for us, Nick?
Absolutely. And it's so funny that we're talking about earworms and songs that have you recall memories. There's a song by the Dorsets. It's called Pork Chops. Now, the Dorsets were a little soul group out of Pittsburgh. Nobody really knew anything about them. They were signed to Sue Records for a while. Nothing really came of it. They have a song called Pork Chops, and it's literally a guy singing about how much he likes pork chops, how he likes them cooked, the sides he likes with it. And he's like, don't give me all this other food. I just want pork chops. I'm living in New Orleans at the time, and we're going over to a friend's house for Thanksgiving. And this song comes on the radio, and we had all never heard it before, so we're giggling and laughing, and it's really funny. And as we're driving, we hear gunshots go off, so we slam on the brakes of the car. We look forward, and we see somebody peeling off, driving away, and then someone else running with a brick in their hand, throwing it, and it goes through the back of the window of the SUV. They throw on their brakes, and we immediately make a very hard right, and we go in the complete opposite direction.
Obviously.
But for the rest of my life, anytime I hear that song, I immediately think back to the moment. I try not to remember the second half of that moment, but I definitely remember just being in the car with the guys and just like hearing it for the first time and laughing and giggling, because you don't really hear songs like that anymore, you know?
Right.
Nobody's singing about how they like a particular food. Everybody's singing about, you know, a girl, or they're going out with friends, or they're singing about a party, or just, you know, these general feelings now, but no one's like, hey, I love pizza, and here's why. So...
Oh, in the past, were there other songs like that that you know of?
Another one is...
And no, because like you said nowadays you don't hear about songs about food, but
oh.
Maybe, you know...
No. Now, even now, thinking about it, no. I mean, there's really... The closest thing...
Isn't there something about ice cream?
At Weird Al did I Love Rocky Road.
Okay, there you go. Okay, that's true. That's Weird Al.
That's true.
Weird Al could do any of those. Maybe you sure that pork chops don't wasn't Weird Al?
Wouldn't that be something if it actually was? And this whole time I thought it was a soul group. But yeah, anytime I hear that song, I immediately think about it.
Oh wow!
Immediately.
Okay. Cool. Thank you very much for that story.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you want to tell people once again how they can get in touch with you?
For sure. I'm over on Twitter at The Rehack, T-H-E-R-E-H-A-K. I don't share a whole lot. Pictures of my cats, pictures of movies, and other stuff I'm doing at the time. And then when I'm not doing movies, you can find me on Rehack Radio at Mixcloud.com, where we're playing tunes. We're playing tunes, telling the stories behind the tunes, fun facts about the tunes. Just anything music-related, I'm bringing it out, and I'm sharing it with you. So that's Rehack Radio on Mixcloud.com.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher you might be using to listen to this show. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. Or you can go directly to my website, MovieRobMinute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.